Matthew chapter 10.
Jesus sends out the 12. He called his 12 disciples to him, and he gave them authority to drive out evil spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions: Do not go among the Gentiles or enter any town of the Samaritans. Go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. As you go, preach this message: The kingdom of heaven is near. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. Freely you have received,
freely give. We've been talking about, listening about, God calling us. More specifically, God calling us by name. Well, today, God is calling you to imitate Jesus. Everything in life that has meaning and value, I think, is rooted in God's grace. In the New Testament, Paul begins his letters by reminding the people to whom that he was writing, reminding them of the grace of God. Grace be with you, he says. Jesus came to reveal that grace to us. He came to show us what it is, to show us that it is real. Jesus came to show us that that grace is available. But he came also to show us that the way we appropriate, the way that we take in, the way that we accept that grace for our lives is through the totality of our response to God. This becomes more and more clear to us as we draw close to Jesus and see him as the model of our response to God. In Jesus, we see the total response, total obedience to the Father's will, total acceptance of the Father's love, total dependence for fulfillment on the Father's resurrection power. The legendary Hollywood motion picture executive Samuel Goldwyn was one of those people who saves everything. And through the years, he refused to allow his staff to throw anything away. His secretary began to get the feeling that she was drowning in the stacks of old telephone messages and letters and inner office memos that were piled everywhere in the office. And so, in desperation, one day she pleaded with Goldwyn, Please, won't you allow me to at least throw away those memos and letters that are more than 10 years old? To which Samuel Goldwyn thought about for a good while and then replied, "All right, but don't forget to make a copy before you do." In a sense, that's exactly how we see the grace of God. We try to save it, when in reality, it's a renewable blessing. A blessing that we grow into every day, if we will, if we hear God calling us to imitate Jesus. Jesus, having selected the 12, is now training them to carry on his ministry in the world. In a few short years, he will be gone, but before his seeming destruction on the cross, he will teach them to imitate him, to copy his lifestyle. The gift that you have received, give also as a gift. Cure the sick, raise the dead, heal the leprous, expel demons. In other words, receive the Father's gift of grace as I have received it, and respond to the Father's gift of love as I have responded through my ministry of loving service to the whole world. I am the way and the truth and the life. Imitate me. Copy me. Well, perhaps the question might be, do we know well enough who it is that we are to copy? Could we know him better than we know him now? Could we dig a little bit deeper than we normally do? copy me. To copy Jesus is what we Christians are being asked to do with our lives. We are being asked to respond to God totally as Jesus did. To bring every part of our being into our relationship with God. We're being asked to freely and joyfully say to God, Lord, I love you with my whole being. In imitation of Christ, I will do your will in all things. In imitation of Christ, I will place my complete trust in the resurrection power of your love to bring me to fulfillment in imitation of Christ. I will commit my life fully to a ministry of loving service, even unto the least of my brothers and sisters, in imitation of Christ. Some time ago, oil was discovered in southern Kentucky. Although it was not a major oil strike, nevertheless, it did cause a flurry of activity, and soon an entire area of the countryside was ripped apart as more and more people began drilling for oil. One day, a visitor to the area was driving through and saw a local farmer on the road walking into town. He offered the farmer a ride, and in the course of conversation between them, the man driving the car learned that oil had been discovered on the rider's farm. Said the farmer, "Yes, sirree, there's good wells, three of them. They say they'll bring in at least 300 barrels a day." And the man driving the car replied, "My goodness, what are you going to do with all that money?" And the farmer looked over at the machine-scarred land and finally turned to his driver and said, "I'm going to buy me a farm that don't have no oil on it." That's a striking story, mainly because it depicts a person who sees something more valuable than the money his oil wells are producing. For more and more in our society today, money is the name of the game of life. If we're still earning it, we want to earn more. If we've quit working to earn money, we want to keep the money we've got. Most of us know deep down what we would do in that farmer's situation, don't we? We'd keep on digging wells. We'd dig more and more, trying to get more money. We'd do everything in our power to move deeper into that strike-it-rich situation. And it's precisely in this area of our existence that most of us who are trying to imitate Christ encounter our biggest problem. The ability to totally respond to God's love and to be totally committed to the Christian ministry of loving service depends in this materialistic age largely on a willingness to choose God over mammon. If the materialistic or money aspect of our lives is not included in our response to God, God is being blocked out of every aspect of our lives, whether we realize it or not. In imitation of Christ, we must trust God enough so that even our quest for money and material possessions will be made to harmonize with His divine will. In other words, we will want less and give more. We cannot serve God and mammon simultaneously. We have Jesus' word on that. A character named Mr. Pump appears in a novel by A.A. Milne called Two People. At one point in the novel, Mr. Pump, who is an important London publisher, is described as follows. Mr. Pump was not a hypocrite. He was a religious man whose religion, now pay attention and hear this, whose religion was too sacred to be carried into his business life. Ouch. The top hat which he hung up in his office was not the same top hat which he prayed into before placing it, thus hallowed, between his feet as he sat in church on Sunday. He had two hats, one hat box. And on Monday morning, he put God reverently away for the week and took out mammon. And then on Sunday morning, he came back to God and put away his business. See, no man can serve two masters simultaneously. No man can serve two masters simultaneously. No man can serve two masters simultaneously. To which we might add that Mr. Pump, who was at least willing to admit this, was closer to the truth than many of us who go on living as though it were possible to serve God and mammon simultaneously. TV personality Hugh Downs tells a story about the problem lawyers and doctors often encounter with people who seek to obtain their professional advice at parties or social gatherings. It seems that a certain doctor and a certain lawyer were conversing with each other during a cocktail party, and while they were talking, a lady approached the doctor and complained about a sore leg. Now, this is a rhetorical question. Don't raise your hand, but has anybody done that? The doctor listened and then told her about applying cold compresses and keeping the leg elevated and taking aspirin. And after she had gone, the doctor turned to the lawyer and said, "You know, I think I really ought to send her a bill. Don't you?" And the lawyer said, "Yes, I think you ought to send her a bill." And so the next day, the doctor got to the office and sent the woman a bill. And the lawyer sent the doctor a bill. Sometimes when people are looking for spiritual counsel and advice, one feels as though one should send a bill for legal services. They come looking for a loophole in the gospel. They come wanting someone to read the fine print for them. They come wanting to learn how to keep God out of certain areas of their lives. They come seeking advice on how to leave some portion of their lives unbaptized, some portion of their lives uncommitted, unreconciled to God. They come wanting to reduce the consideration, the payment. They come wanting cheap grace. But there is no fine print. There are no loopholes. There is no escape clause. There is no cheap grace. And that's the reason why Jesus' words to his disciples in the lesson today still apply. The harvest is good, but the laborers are scarce. Those willing to go out and share God's love with others is scarce. The Old Testament book of Hosea contains a passage in which the prophet is ridiculed. It reads, "Let Israel know it. The prophet is a fool. The man of the spirit is mad." And yet to prophesy for God is our calling. We are called to live our lives in imitation of Christ, the prophet of prophets. We are called to be copies of Christ. We're called to be fools for Christ's sake. As Paul has written, to be a fool for Christ's sake is the highest title that we can aspire to attain. The genuine, serious believer who is willing to stake everything on the love of God and Jesus Christ is always mad. Well, he's always mad in this sense, that it requires a real touch of madness to go that one big step beyond the mediocrity of common sense. It requires a real touch of madness to take that great leap of faith into the arms of Jesus. It takes a special kind of foolishness to accept God's grace in a way that says, in imitation of Christ, I will respond to your total gift of love to me by giving myself over totally to you through the Christian ministry of loving service to my earthly brothers and sisters. Jesus came to show us that the way we appropriate God's grace for our lives is through the totality of our response. Don't be like Mr. Pump. Don't put your Sunday hat in the box on Monday morning. Imitate Jesus. Hear God calling you to imitate Jesus. Hear God calling you by name to imitate Christ.